Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Granger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Granger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRANGER, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 290. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80-grade co-host checking in live from the Sunshine State, Mr. Chris Clay. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It's good. I'm already a little sunburned from one day at the backfields. It's much warmer than it was back home, and the sun is out and shining. So I'm about to put on some sunscreen tomorrow, but it's good. I cannot complain about being here and watching baseball all day. Living the dream.
Absolutely. Wish I was down there with you, soaking in the sun. Though it was warmer here today. It was up into the 50s here, which when it gets up in the 50s here in Maine, like every spring when it starts warming up, it feels like 70. Like, you'll be people outside, t-shirt and shorts, tanning it up in the backyard. It's always a good time here in Maine. And we got the Seal Series starting, well, today when you're listening to this, and the game will probably be going on when you're listening to this as it starts at, I think, 6 a.m. here, which is 7 p.m. over there. I think they're 13 hours ahead of us. So a little bit of morning baseball for you on your Wednesday. Some Dodgers and some Padres with Jackson Merrill in the lineup. Should be a fun time. But we're going to continue, though, today with our kind of dynasty risers and fallers, players that have been moving up and down our rankings this spring. Again, as we mentioned last episode, you know, can't really move a player too much. There are some trends that are going on right now that we're taking note of, and we'll discuss those all today. And again, this will be the followers portion. Talked about risers yesterday in episode 289, so if you missed that, go back and check that out. A lot of fun names there, and some equally as intriguing names today, just for the wrong reasons. But before we get into that, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I'm at EricCross04. Show is at ToolShedPod. If you enjoy the podcast, please rate and review. Check out all the great stuff going on over on our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com. That's where all of our, we got daily write-ups, dynasty prospect rankings, a lot of other fun stuff as well. And obviously, you got to check out all the great stuff going on over at Rotoballer. So much great content every single day, podcasts, tools, you name it, Rotoballer has it. And use that code TOOLSHED to give you 10% off, help you win your leagues this year. Get it for a discount. Nothing better than that. All right, Chris, let's hop on with, I think, the player that we've probably talked about more than any other player on this podcast over the last 3.5 years of this pod's existence. The one, the only, Jared Kelnick, who is bad, doesn't even begin to describe Jared Kelnick so far this spring. I think we both thought that maybe there's going to be some little bit of a resurgence, fresh start, new team, good team, but 3-for-42 so far this spring, 12 strikeouts, zero extra base hits. So the 071, 152.071/line. Looks like he's going to be platoon now with Adam Duvall, who they brought in about a week ago now or so. At this point, are you both feet out the door with Kelenic? I mean, I thought this was his last-ditch effort, and it's hard to say, like, you're fully out on the guy that's still, I think, 24, but, man, it's not looking good right now.
No, it sure hasn't, and I really thought the change of scenery would do him some good, and I honestly wanted to buy back in. I don't think I got him anywhere, fortunately, because it looks like I was completely wrong, and I hate to... hopefully not have led anybody astray by saying that I wanted to buy back in, but I really did feel like that it was the case where Kelenic moving to Atlanta would allow him to be in a situation where he didn't need to be the best player. He didn't need to put pressure on himself. Remember, he was deemed the savior of Seattle when he came up. At one point, he was ranked the number one prospect above Julio Rodriguez, and there were very high expectations. And Kelenic put a lot of pressure on himself to perform. And at the end of the day, I think that pressure got to him and it didn't really work out all. I still see a frustrated Kelenic. You watch his emotions this spring, and it still to me looks like a player that is really pressing to try to perform, to try to prove something. And you know, you hate to write somebody off that's still 24 years old. And I don't want to do that. But at the end of the day, here we are. Duvall has signed. He is going to platoon, which I know he's still a lefty. He's still going to be on the strong side of a platoon. But how much does that affect him? At the end of the day, I look and I see someone that has really struggled this spring. And I don't want to put too much into spring stats, but you at least want to see something a little better than a negative 38 WRC plus that we have seen to this point, because that's just not good. And so when I look at Kelenic, he has a total of 3 hits in 46 plate appearances, and he's walked just 4 times to 12 strikeouts. So the numbers so far this spring have not given me any inspiration that he will be any better. Maybe get back to Atlanta, the team gets rolling, he's gelling hopefully with his teammates, and things get on track. But at the moment, I am rather out on Jared Kelenic.
I'm wondering if he's trending towards just being like waiver wire fodder, the guy that you pick up to ride for a couple of weeks. He got an injury, whatever. Maybe he gets hot. He'll still have those hot streaks. Now, even through all the bad over the last couple of years, he's had those hot streaks where people are like, oh, maybe he's turning it around. Then he goes back into a massive funk. And yeah, like I'm not like having him plummet down my rankings right now, but he was one that I was really hoping would have a solid spring. And there's still some good in the profile. Obviously, he can still hit the ball pretty hard. He's at a barrel rate above 9% every year of his career. Hard hit rate was 45.5% last year. EV rate a tick under 91 miles an hour. But K rate's been way too high. Contact rate's been way too low. I guess he's better than the 141 and 181 that he was his first 2 years. He hit 253 last year. But yeah, I'm 2 feet out the door. Again, I need to see a big sample size of him turning it around, not just a small one. So, yeah, I'm pretty much mostly out on Kelenic. Beatty as well. Beatty's one where I was hoping would turn it around the spring, another one that I was hoping would have a good spring. He hasn't been as bad as Kelenic, so let me just leave with that, because he's hitting 239, 293, 342 this spring. Does have a home run, but a bit underwhelming. And he's one that's, I think this is going to be a big year for Beatty. It's weird to say that as he's so young in his career, but will he be an impact guy? Can he be that 270, 25 bat that we thought he could be? Or was that unrealistic and we need to temper expectations? So I think that's the year we're looking at with Beatty. You know, the what kind of player can he be? Is it more of a minor impact or a major impact? Well, we'll see. I still like Beatty. Seen a couple times live, so I like the bat, but he's really into a prove me, show something to me phase for right now.
Yeah, so at the end of the day, I think that the biggest thing for me with Brett Beatty is just the launch angle. He can't seem to lift the ball enough, and he hits the ball hard. Like you said, the numbers are all right, but at the end of the day, like if he's hitting the ball on the ground still too much, I'm afraid this is the case where it's like he just never can bounce back from that. And the ground ball rate, yeah, I don't want to put any stock into this at 70%. this spring is quite high, and he's historically been in the 50 to 60% range. So I'm out. Like, I've held on to my ranking of Beatty as like a top 200, 250 type dynasty asset. But right now, like, I'm leaning more that maybe he needs to take a pretty big tumble in my rankings. And it's still young. Like, he's 24 years old. So much like Kelnick, you don't want to like completely write this guy off. But man, I don't know. I'm a little bit concerned just by the fact that he's not getting any loft. And sometimes, like, when these guys make a complete swing change to lift, like, it affects them in a negative way.
Yeah.
And also, maybe guys that just hit the ball on the ground are who they are. It's really hard for them to be able to change that. We've seen that with Vlad. We've seen that with Brian Hayes. Like, it's hard for guys to be able to change the launch angle. And I wonder if that's the case here with Beatty. Somebody that always hits the ball hard, but does hit the ball on the ground too much. And even so, the contact rates are there. And if they're average or worse contact rates, and then you're hitting the ball on the ground too much, it's just, it doesn't bode well for success. Now, I think Beatty's going to get every chance to, you know, be the Mets third baseman, but I wonder if Mark Vientos steps in and takes that spot. We shall see.
I was wondering that too. I don't know how much they want Vientos in the field. He's never been a great defender. But outside of him, that bench is, it's Joey Wendell. It's G-Man Choi. And so I don't really think there's a lot that's going to take away from Beatty's playing time outside of maybe Vientos a bit. But you should get a significant chunk of time this year for Beatty, unless he completely is terrible and they demote him and bring up somebody else or trade for somebody. But yeah, I need to see something from Beatty this year. He's going to be a consistent faller down my rankings this season for sure. Next one up has not played bad this spring, but hard to play bad when you're not playing at all. Guy we haven't talked about since the suspension, and that's obviously Nolovi Marte, who will miss the first 80 games this year after being suspended for something I probably can't even pronounce, some long 14-letter word probably. But does this kind of alter your opinion on Marte? We don't think it was I think, I can't remember what the reasoning was why he was taking it right now, but obviously it wasn't to get better. He was dealing with something else. But does this change your opinion on him long-term, or are you like, in my thinking right now, where I'm like, all right, yeah, this sucks. I had a crap ton of shares of him, but I think this long-term is just a minor speed bump, 80-game speed bump, so to speak, and I think he's still going to be a top five potential third baseman down the road.
Yeah, it is tough with him because I do think that the initial or even the perceived value does take a little bit of a hit with Marte. You're going to have those people that are wondering, was his performance like up because of this? And you'll also have those that he's suspended for 80 games, like he's going to take a decent sized hit. And I think the biggest question is, so how much of a hit is that? Like, how much should we actually drop Marte for this? So like, looking at my rankings, like, I'm trying to figure out, like, where then do I slot Nolovi Marte in? Because I pushed him into the top 100 of my dynasty ranks. I was pretty confident in him moving forward. And obviously this setback is only for half of a season. I don't think the performance probably is all that different. I think sometimes guys use these things to recover, and maybe, I don't know. We don't know exactly what the case is and why exactly or he was taking or what exactly he was taking. So at the end of the day, I think looking at Nolovi Marte's value at the moment, like, is he still a top 150 dynasty asset? Probably. I think it's a decent opportunity to buy, but I do think his value has taken a little bit of a hit just because of the perceived value of it. And I think that sadly, and I don't even say sadly, but that's a big part of the game we play is perceived value in the dynasty world. And so the way somebody looks at a player and the way the group looks at a player kind of determines some value in that sense. So I'm looking at like other third basemen, like at this point, who are you taking? Like Brian Hayes, or are you taking Nolovi Marte? I don't know.
I'm still going Marte personally.
Yeah. So that range probably is a little low for him. There's a pretty sizable drop off, it seems, like third base. actually, but looking at like a corner infield, you'd either have a Spencer Steer or Noel V, same team.
Ooh, that's a tough one. I like Steer a lot.
Yeah,
I have Steer 90th overall right now in my dynasty rankings. I had Noel V 78. Still trying to figure out where I want to bump him down to before my update here upcoming in the next week or so. We'll see. I think he's still going to be, might even still be top 100 for me. He's still only 22 years old and a younger 22. So just imagine, like, hey, he was still down in the AAA for the first 3 months of the season. That's how I'm equating it. So I'm going to, I'll move him down a little bit, but he might even still be top 100 for me right now. Like, he'll probably move down. I probably would still take him over Josh Jung. This probably bumps him down maybe below Kobe Mayo at this point and back down below like Arenado, probably Bregman as well. But I think still in that range for sure. And I would definitely buy the dip if that dip happens in your league, because I still had him as my number 5 third baseman in our Dynasty Crystal Ball episode. And Chris, did you have him top 5 at that position as well? I can't remember.
I'm pretty sure I did. I can't remember exactly, but I think I did.
And if you didn't, I think you were like considering him or something like that.
So
we both obviously still think pretty highly of him, and hopefully this is just a minor speed bump because the talent is still there. Ballpark contact is great. The lineup should be pretty fun for the foreseeable future. All the things you're looking for with an impact young player. Same position, moving over to the American League now with Isak Paredes, who has struggled pretty bad this spring. Not like striking out a ton, but just not hitting for power. Something that both Chris and I have talked about various times over this offseason and various episodes about how he was a very hard sell for both of us. So far, 7-for-31, hitting .226, the .258 slug, and a .032 ISO. He has one double, no home runs so far. And this is a guy that had 31 home runs and only 23 barrels last year. You don't really see that too often. Especially for a guy that hits 31 home runs to have more home runs than barrels. We'll be looking at an 86.9 average exit velocity, 28.5% hard hit rates, which was in the bottom 6% of hitters last year. And good approach, doesn't strike out a lot, decent enough contact rates. But I think there's a better chance he's below 20 home runs than above 30 again. And I'm not saying, like, oh, look, I'm right, because he's not hitting power for power in spring, but it just didn't add up. He pulled everything, and that's just hard to do year over year. Like, 1 year you can pull it off. We've seen that done before, but to do that for 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, and longer, that's really difficult. Pitchers adjust, and they'll make sure that you have a hard time trying to pull that ball to left field, so. Yeah, I am very much out on Paredes at cost. Can he still be serviceable? Sure. Can he still be like a 260 guy that gets you 15, 18 home runs? Absolutely. But I think for where he's going right now in redrafts, especially his dynasty value, like I had people chirping at me on Twitter when I put out my updated top 10 dynasty rankings at each position, those tweets. And obviously, I didn't have him in top 10 at third base. And people are like, oh, he deserves to be there. No, I don't think he does. I think he's still a very strong sell because the power is just not realistic.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you on Paredes, and I think that he is a good player. Don't get me wrong, like, he is a pretty good player. But for fantasy skill set, like, I'm thinking we probably see something closer to 2022 than the 2023. And maybe it's a mixture of the two. Like, we did see a big jump forward last season. You mentioned the power is a little bit of a sell for me. I don't really believe that he is going to hit for that kind of power again. I don't see 30 home runs. His contact rate actually took a step backwards last year, and it's still good. Like, the contact rates are still really solid, but the overall rate did drop 2 percentage points, but they were still, the zone and the overall were still in a good range there. And then looking at the power, as you mentioned, like, the barrels just weren't there. He perfected the pull fly ball last year that really worked in Tampa. And ultimately, will we see him hit more breaking balls? That was apparently a focus this offseason. Like, he knew that he was going to get tacked more with breaking balls, so he was really going to put an emphasis on hitting those. So I'm curious to see, can he hit more breaking balls? And he's still young, so maybe he can, but there has been some struggles against breakers in the past. Last year had a 28% whiff rate against them, hit just .215 with a .205 XBA. So maybe he gets thrown more breaking balls and less fastballs because he did do a lot of his damage on the fastballs. Still to be determined. We'll see. But yeah, I agree. I'm in the sell Isak Paredes camp because I think that it's max value. I think you can cash out and get something pretty good right now.
Yeah, for sure. And just looking at his profile, like Chris, if you looked at it was like a, you know, a blind profile test and like you didn't see what the surface stats were, you're just looking at the metrics on Savant and you see those underwhelming quality of contact metrics, you see the good approach, you see the good contact rates. I'd probably guess, like if you told me, like, all right, guess this player's average and home runs, I'd probably say like 280 and like 12 home runs. It's complete what he's doing on the surface does not correlate to what he's doing under the hood or even close to it. It's a really weird profile for Paredes, but yeah, definitely more of a sell than a buy for me. Last hitter on the list here, going back out west to another young player, but Marco Luciano really struggling this spring training. In 12 games, he's 4-for-28, zero home runs. He got one double, six walks to 13 strikeouts. So he's still walking at a decent clip, but striking out too much, not putting the ball in play, and not even hitting for power. Like the one thing he was holding on to was some solid power and hasn't even done that. And last year, very small sample size, obviously only 45 play appearances, but was really looked overmatched at the major league level. 37.8% K rate, zero barrels in 22 batted ball events, but did have a 93 mile an hour average exit velocity, but everything was into the ground. Another issue, common trend here, a lot of hitting the ball into the ground too much. Well, outside of Paredes. But and Chris, I don't know. Obviously, people, the name still carries some value and the raw power is there. And you and I have both seen that firsthand. But outside of the raw power, I don't think he hits for a high average. I don't think he's going to run at all. Maybe more than 3-4 steals a year while hitting 230 to 240. Maybe he gives you 25 home runs. But at that point, he's not really that desirable for fantasy. So if you can still cash out and get anything because of the name value, I absolutely would.
Yeah, it's really hard to watch Luciano and see the performance. He's completely fallen out of favor for the shortstop job that he should have had. Nick Ahmed should not beat out somebody of this talent level. But, you know, I'll be honest, my concern for Luciano is really dated back to when we saw him in the Arizona Fall League.
Yeah,
that's been 3 years where he just, you know, the body language and the mannerisms on the field, that's something that I like to watch pretty closely with prospects. And everybody said, oh, he just doesn't want to be there. It's been a long season, et cetera. But it was really clear he didn't want to be playing and didn't want to be there. And the results have not been good at all. And even in Double A last year, where the results were decent, he still hit 228. He still had a 30% strikeout rate. The K rate has gone up pretty much at every level and every stop. And to be striking out, even in AAA last year, at a 36% clip, that jumped to 38 in the majors. It's been 37% this spring. It is not pretty. And I don't care what kind of power you have. At the end of the day, if you can't make contact, it really doesn't matter. So that's my ultimate concern, is that he's just not going to make enough contact for it to actually play. And I am rather out on Luciano. So if you can get anything for his name value, I probably would.
Yep, absolutely agree. All right, moving over to some pitchers now, starting with Frankie Montas of the Cincinnati Reds, a guy that was, I think he was a top 25 arm back in like 2021. He had a 3.37 ERA that year, 207 Ks in 187 innings. Was really trending up in Dynasty. They had not a bad, but took a step back in 2022. ERA went up over 4. WHIP went up. K rate went down a bit. And then last year, you missed the entire year except for 1 1/3 innings. Now goes from the Yankees over to Cincinnati. So he's been going the wrong way in terms of like ballpark quality for him. He was in Oakland. Great. Pitcher's park. Yankee Stadium. All right. Less of a pitcher's park. More of a hitter's park. And now you're going to the either number 1A or 1B most hitter-friendly ballpark in all of baseball. And the thing that I'm looking at here, like looking at his spring stats so far, again, we don't take a lot from it, but he's had 4 starts, 11 2/3 innings. ERA is near 7. I don't care. WHIP is 163. Don't care. The one number I'm looking at right here, 4 home runs allowed in 11 and 2/3 innings. You're giving up a lot of home runs. Obviously, it's never good anywhere, but at Great American Ballpark, like, this is not a good fit whatsoever for Frankie Montas. I was already not like out, but was definitely fading him when he went to the Yankees. Then basically a full missed year. Now even worse ballpark. I don't want anything to do with Montas. I know you can't really trade him right now, but I don't know. Like, Chris, if you had Montas, what are you doing with him right now? Just, you just got to hold and hope for the best.
Yeah, hopefully it's a shallow enough league where you cut him for an upside play. But in a deeper format, I think you are in a wait-and-see approach mode. I really don't love the fit in Cincinnati at all. We're talking about someone that has allowed a lot of home runs in the past, as you mentioned, and that's it's gone up throughout his career. And I know you look, and obviously 2020 was a shortened season, so you're going to have some weird outlier numbers. But even in 2021, near a home run per nine in Oakland, like, Oakland is not a very pitcher-friendly place, or it's not a very hitter-friendly place, excuse me. And then we saw it when he went to the Yankees as well. There was a severe home run problem there. And now in Great American Ballpark, I just don't love this at all. I'd really like to see him missing more bats this spring. I would like to be at least have something to be encouraged by in that sense. But we haven't seen that at all. And really, if the fly ball rate is hovering like 35% like it has been, then I think a lot of balls are going to end up leaving the yard here for Frankie Montas, who does allow some big fly balls. And I look at the profile and I think there could be a bounce back. I really do. I really think he could have. But I just don't love the fit at all for him where he landed. And so that's really the biggest concern for me. And that's what it has been, is that he's just in a terrible place to pitch and in a very hitter-friendly environment where the ball could leave the yard quite often. And I know the spring stats have been a little skewed by a couple of games. He's had two outings in which he was solid. His first outing of the year, he looked good. He threw two scoreless. And even on Monday, as you're hearing this Wednesday, on Monday, he had 4 innings of one-run ball where he struck out 5. But the previous two starts before that were both 4 earned over 2 2/3 and 3 innings. And he allowed 2 home runs in each of those starts and then even lost feel for some of his pitches and was walking guys as well, putting them on. Frankie Montas is a really tough eval for me, but it's just easiest to avoid him, in my opinion, given that he is going to be in Great American Ballpark.
Yeah, I agree that there would be some bounce back appeal if he was in a better situation. Since I don't think Montas is done being a fantasy role of an arm, but I would have loved for him to just land, I don't know, with Kansas City or San Francisco or another team like that in a better situation and a better ballpark, especially. So yeah, luckily I don't have any Montas shares because I didn't have any when he was going well. Obviously, I wasn't going to acquire him when he went to the Yankees, so I don't have to deal with him right now. But yeah, he's not one I'd be looking to acquire right now, even with the price tag. At least not this year. All right, moving over to Oakland and Joe Boyle, who has a major issue of his own, but a slightly different one. Too many walks with him, and that's putting it nicely. This is a guy that, in the first two outings of the spring, didn't walk anybody. I think it was only like, 5 2/3, I believe it was. But you're like, all right, that's encouraging. And even last year, in his 3 starts with Oakland down the stretch, he had a 8.3% walk rate in 16 innings. Again, I wasn't one where I'm like, all right, it's his walk issue is fixed, because you don't magically go from an 18% walk rate guy, not 12, not 13, not 14, an 18% walk rate guy down to an 8% walk rate guy. That just does not happen overnight. And it's really hard to, when you're that bad with your control, to get it fixed in general, even to back down into the 10, 11, 12% range, which is still high. But his last 3 outings, 12 walks in 10 innings. So obviously that issue is still there. The stuff is really good. There's no doubting the stuff is there. K rate was near 36% in the minor leagues. He can miss bats. We know that. He can look dominant at times when he actually is locating, but that's just few and far between. So I don't know. I want to buy just because price tag is still, I think, still fairly low, but I don't know, Chris. I'm just worried he just never figures it out and is pushed to the bullpen because of it.
Yeah, when you say you don't know how your command improved, like, They ask him, how did you just magically get better in Oakland and throw more strikes? And the answer is, I don't know. I think that's a major red flag for me. It's really fun to dream on Joe Boyle's upside. The stuff is pretty tantalizing. And if he does figure it out, then I think there's something here. And early in the spring, it looked like it. But it was just 5 1/3 innings. His first 5 1/3 innings, 0 walks. That's really good. But then we threw 3 innings, 3 walks, 3 innings, 5 walks, and 4 innings, 4 walks. Kind of back to the Joe Boyle that we have long come to know. I am a little bit concerned. It's been quite a roller coaster ride, and I think that's just the Joe Boyle experience, his watching and seeing what he's doing, this kind of setting. It's okay, some outings are going to be really good. And I think you're going to have those starts where things look really good for Boyle. And then you're going to have the starts where the train wheels just come off, man. It's 5 walks, and he can't get out of 2 innings, and he really blows up your ratios. So I guess it depends on like how much you can stomach that, because while the results still have looked decent on the surface, like everything has looked decent this spring, like a 2.93 ERA, it does come with a 4.08 FIP and a 5.07 xFIP. The walk rate has ballooned, as I mentioned, 0% the first 2 starts. Now it's up to 19.4% overall, which tells you those last couple starts have not been great. So we need to really see something coming down the stretch here in spring training for me to want to buy back in. But a near 30% walk rate the last 3 starts tells me that Boyle's probably back closer to who we thought he was prior to him going to Oakland.
Who is that NFL coach? Like, they are who we thought they were.
Yeah, yeah. Who was that?
Is it Dennis Green?
Yes, they were who they thought they were.
It was the Bears. That's right. Okay, I was trying to think who used to. Yeah, that's a little bit, 10 plus years ago at this point? Maybe
longer. That's got to be.
Maybe longer than that. But yeah, Joe Boyle is who we thought he was, at least for now. And yeah, this is not something I don't like investing in guys with walk rate issues. Again, if it's 12%, Mick Abel, I'm still holding on a little bit of hope for. He's been like 12, 13%, 18% from 12%. That's a massive jump. This thing, like, that's a jump. Basically, it's nearly the same jump as going from not necessarily George Kirby to Mick Abel, but someone that's in the 5% walk rate range up to Mick Abel. That's the same jump you're looking at going from Abel up to a Joe Boyle. Yeah, I'm still pretty much out at this point. He's going to need to show me a lot of improvements there before I even consider buying in. Kopech here is another interesting one here because he's been struggling this spring, and B, he's now transitioning to the bullpen, and this is a bullpen with not a lot of talent in there. I think people are like, oh, boom, he's the closer. Everything's hunky-dory. I don't know. I don't think he's the closer. I think that's Jordan Leisure. And there's still a lot of issues here with Kopech. I mean, this spring, 8 innings, 6 earned, 2 home runs, 2 hit batters, 6 walks, 10 strikeouts, 150 whip, 675 ERA. That's a guy that's seen his walk rate steadily climb by a few percentage points every year. The last time he was in the bullpen back in 2021, he was pretty good. He had a 36% strikeout rate, 8.5% walk rate, 350 ERA, 283 xERA, and was pretty damn good. 103 Ks in 69 1/3 innings. That was a long time ago, though, and this is not the same Kopech. The whiff rates have not been what they once were. Like, his slider has been under 28% each of the last 2 years, and that was always his big whiff rate offering. Maybe he still has some value. But I'm not rushing out to go get Kopech right now, Chris.
No, I'm not really sure how this plays out as far as whose job it is. I do think that Jordan Leisure is the best arm in this bullpen right now. And they're pretty confident he's breaking camp with the team at this point. I think that it's pretty much a shoe-in. I have no clue who gets the ball for the first save. Maybe it's Brebby if he's healthy. Maybe it's Steven Wilson. I don't know. I do think Kopech will be better in a bullpen role, but how valuable is it if he's throwing the 7th inning? I don't know. So I think that's my biggest hangup with Kopech, is that we don't know. We've seen the value drop like a rock the last few years, and I'm just not sure that, you know, can the walk rates be curbed in a bullpen role? And I think that that's still to be determined. He's been a starter for most of his life. So you mentioned 2021, he did pitch out of the pen, and the walk rates were a little bit more respectable, sub 10%, and the strikeout rates were good too. So maybe this is a case where you buy into Kopech and just see where it goes. But personally, I don't want any part of this if I don't have to. And I'd rather take my shots elsewhere.
Yep.
Because I just think that Kopech has gone in the wrong direction continually. He's going to be 28 years old soon. It seems like he still should be like a 23-year-old break in the league, but he's going to be 28 now. And I don't know. I just lost a bit of confidence in Michael Kopech. So, yeah, I'm mixed bag here on what the results look like out of the pen. But I do think it's a better move for him. He's definitely going to be better than in his starter role. But does that make me want to buy him? I'm not sure that's the case.
Yeah, I'm there with you. Because I think it'll be there's potential for more value in the bullpen. But I don't think this is going to magically turn his career around. And I was just kind of thinking what you were talking about, that trade where we got rid of him and Yoan Moncada to the White Sox for Chris Sale. And yeah, the Chris Sale tenure in Boston was tumultuous. It was, he had some good seasons, some bad, some a lot of missed time, but we gave him a lot of money, obviously. But I don't know, would you have rather had that, or would you rather have had the more down than up with Moncada? Moncada had that one good year. It's been pretty terrible ever since. Same with Kopech. So I think the Red Sox ended up winning that deal. We get a World Series out of it. So got to like that. And both Moncada and Kopech are not really impact players, so to speak. All right, let's close up the show here with a trio of injured pitchers here. Obviously, three, I think, top 20 ADP starters. And obviously, Gerrit Cole here was SP2 behind Spencer Strider. Not anymore. And Bradish and Senga, I think we're both back in top 20, or with Bradish maybe just outside of it. But and obviously, it's hard to answer this question with one blanket answer, Chris, because obviously it depends on where you are in the standings, if you're a contender or more of a rebuild. And obviously, there's different injuries here, different timelines, et cetera. They're all different ages, too, these three pitchers. But let's say you are a contender, because I think that's a lot of the people tweeting at me, and I'm sure you as well, have been asking, like, hey, I'm a contender. I have Gerrit Cole. I got this offer. Like, I got one today, someone asking me, I think it was for Joe Ryan and a draft pick, which this person said would turn out to be, like, someone it ranked, like, 175 to 200 in our dynasty rankings in that league. So it's hard to, really answer that. But what would you be willing to sell him for if you're looking to continue to win now? Or would you just rather hold on to him and cross your fingers that it is only a month or two?
This one's really tough for me because, yeah, I'm very afraid that this could turn into a situation where Cole is out for 2024 and 2025 because that's obviously worst case, that he rests, he tries to let it heal, but then he still ends up needing surgery. So that's the fear here. And I don't know what to do with that. I'm sitting on him in a dynasty league that I'm firmly win now. And I'm not really sure what I could get for him or what I would take for him. Because the last thing I want is for myself to trade Gerrit Cole for Joe Ryan, who's a good pitcher. But then Cole come back and pitch 150 innings this year and be really good. Like, I would absolutely regret that.
Yep.
But on the flip side, do I want to sit on him on the IL for 2 years? And I'm not sure I want to do that either. So it's a really tough spot with Cole. And I wish I had a better answer. And I wish I had a better answer for all of these guys with what to do with them. Because I also, in that same league I have Cole, I also have Senga. And that's tough. I'm sitting on Bradish in a dynasty league. And at the end of the day, until we know a little more, it's really hard. But the problem is, let's say the news comes out that Bradish is going to need surgery. At that point, his value probably dips even more. Same for Senga. At least Cole, you have like a couple of months to figure that out. But right now, I don't know. I think it's a very tough spot to roster all of these guys and to know what to do with them. And I'm not sure I've got it figured out. Would I trade Cole? So let's say, what's the minimum that I would trade Gerrit Cole for in dynasty? If I'm looking to replace him with a pitcher right now with what we know, what would I hope to get?
Yeah, here's a good one. Would you do him for Logan Webb?
That's the name I was looking at. I think I would take Logan Webb. So that's the range that I would say, okay, I'll take Webb and we'll be happy no matter what, because Webb's a really good arm. Webb's really underrated. He's going to throw innings. And you just hope that Webb's healthy, because Cole was that guy too, who threw innings and was safe. But yeah, I think I would take Webb. Would I go down a little bit further than that? Maybe. I think probably I have one more tier in me there, like Skuball, yeah, probably.
Yeah, Freed. I would take Skuball. Yeah. Any, so right now I have Logan Webb at 65 overall. I would take anybody. Like I have Skuball 56, Pablo Lopez 51. I would take those guys over him. It gets down into what I do, like Framber Valdez, Logan Gilbert, like Lizardo. That's where I'm like, that's where I think I start teetering the other way, where it's, I don't know. And Joe Ryan's firmly in that range for me as well. So, yeah. I don't know. I don't have any dynasty shares of Cole. I had one redraft share that I literally got two freaking days before this came out, which is still irritating the living crap out of me. But I do have, I think one share each, maybe two, of Senga and Bradish. So that's, that kind of sucks. But yeah, it's really hard right now. But and even, obviously, we're not doctors, but even doctors, people that are very, like Nick Savali, who used to do a lot of good stuff over at the Anthrax, while Chris and I were there, Jesse Morse, like all these actual doctors, even, you never know how an arm is going to, and they don't know how Garrett Cole's elbow is going to react. They don't know. And how many times have we seen the old R&R, rest and rehab, turn into Tommy John? We've seen that a lot. So it's tough. But I think right now, yeah, I think Logan Webb is at that threshold where below like him and Peralta and that tier, I think that's when I start to be like, all right, no, probably not, unless I get a good second piece with it. But if I was able to get like Pablo Lopez, Skuball, Bobby Miller, or something like that, I probably would. It was at least got some additional upside to be had there. But it's tough. It really is. But that is going to wrap us up for this episode. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Again, we hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back again on Friday with our bold predictions episode. It's always a fun one. Looking forward to that. Check out all the great stuff going on over at Rotoballer and our personal platforms. And we'll see you again on Friday. But until then, everyone take care.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.